Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hi, this is Mary Lurson with the NAMM Foundation, and I'm coming to you from the National Association for School Music Dealers, NASMD National Conference here in Palm Springs, California. Don't hold it against me to be in beautiful Palm Springs, but I'm here with some great friends, and this is some folks from the NAMYP. This is the NAMM Young Professionals Organization. So I'm going to ask, we have four in the room and one on the line. I'm asking you just to go around, tell us who you are.
Hi, I'm Ryan West. I am Executive Vice President at West Music Company, as well as the past president for NAMYP. And I also have the opportunity to work on our mentorship program.
Great. And where is West Music?
Oh, in Iowa.
Coralville, Iowa. I know that.
Yep. Hi, I'm Nick Averwater. I'm with Amro Music, where I'm the sales manager, and we specialize in serving the needs of school bands and orchestras across the Mid-South.
And you're headquartered in?
We are based in Memphis, Tennessee.
A famous music city.
Yes.
Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Great.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Murphy. I'm from Danzer. I'm a sales manager. And we are a importer and distributor for Van Doren and Dennis Wick.
And you're headquartered in?
Champaign, Illinois.
Great. And Mark on the line?
I'm Mark Despotakis. I'm the Director of Market Development at Progressive Music, and so we are a school music dealer servicing Western Pennsylvania, and I am also currently the president of NAMM Young Professionals.
Fantastic. Yes, I'm sitting here with the younger generation, of which I keep moving farther and farther away from, but so it's wonderful to be with you. One thing that's interesting in what you're all sharing now is your participation in NAMYP. Because included in our audience for Talking at Music Education is the college music student. Mm-hmm. And the college music student that's coming and attending our NAMM show through the Gen Next program. And let's take a little time now, because I'd love to hear sort of the thumbnail of each of your journey into this side of the music, which is the music retail, the music service side. And just to hear a little bit from each of you. Mark, since you're on the line, would you mind if we started with you?
Sure. So my career path wasn't necessarily to work in the music industry, and I think that's probably fair to say of most people. I actually was going to work in television news. Actually did work in television news for a while. I was at CNN in Washington for a period of time. But all throughout college, I had worked with a high school marching band just as kind of a summer job, and I just loved it. And when I was back in Pittsburgh, looking to move on from CNN to work in other parts of television, I went back and was still teaching with this high school band. And it turns out one of the folks who was also on that band staff ran a music store and just needed some help. And I was between jobs and I said, sure, I'll come in. And I actually fell in love with the industry. It got to keep me connected to the education world, but then also to open me up to this whole part of the world in music that I never knew about. And so I have been there ever since, and I've been lucky enough to get involved with things that NAMM offers, and especially this group, the NAMM Young Professionals Group.
So Mark, how long were you, first of all, in the news business? I think everybody's eyebrows just went up here in the room. How long were you with broadcast?
It was a couple years that I was doing it, but it never led me exactly to the career path that I had hoped to get doing the news stuff. I was in Washington, and everybody says it's cool, and you get to do politics and stuff, which is my kind of one of my passions that I'm really interested in. But while I was there, I was producing medical stories, and I just didn't enjoy that at all. So I decided I was going to go back and try to make something happen in local news, and really wasn't fulfilled doing that either. So it really all worked out for me. But one of the interesting facts is that I actually anchored coverage of September 11th, 2001. I was still in college at that point, and I anchored it on our local television station, which was owned by the university, but was actually a community-based television station. So that's kind of one of my claim to fame, if you will, in my television career of being there and anchoring that day that obviously we all remember, and trying to keep my composure on what was such a really a frightening day, especially since we were very close to where that fourth plane went down in Shanksville. we were about an hour and a half away from that. It was a scary day, but it helped to kind of fuel that passion that, I did have for television news and for politics and for affairs of the world, which I still have. I mean, I've been so lucky that NAMM has actually kind of afforded me the opportunity to get involved in a different way in that, in the advocacy world, to do this newfound love I have of working in the music industry, but also kind of working in that political sphere as well.
And you certainly have been in your state of Pennsylvania and guiding the whole Arts Education Coalition effort there. So, yes, politics did not stay away from you for long,
correct,
Mark. Good for you. Great. Ryan, let's hear from you, your path, your thumbnail path, which is also has a very interesting twist in it.
They're all interesting, yeah. Right? No, I grew up around the business. West Music is a third generation family business. My grandfather started it. So I grew up around it, and it was always the summer job where if I needed a job, it was going to be at the warehouse or painting the light poles or working in the repair shop, et cetera. But I was always around the music business and had the opportunity to have music, pianos, kind of my instrument, a part of my life. When I graduated from high school, though, I decided to take a different path, and I moved to New York and spent about 10 years out there doing theater, studying and then acting off Broadway and doing that kind of stuff. And when I was about at that 10-year mark, I was talking to my dad, and he was talking about going to the Music China show. And I was like, wow, that sounds really cool. What's it going to be like? He's like, well, do you want to come? And I said, sure. And so I quickly got a visa and a plane ticket and flew to China and spent 2 weeks with him traveling around China and seeing
factories and the flute factories.
Right? Yeah. And it was just really eye-opening. It was something that I'd always known about, but I'd taken some time away from it. And at the time, I just remember having a conversation with him saying, you know, this could be something that could be interesting to come back to. And at the time, I'm in my late 20s. And I was thinking, you know, when I'm really old, like when I'm 35 years old, maybe I'll move back to it. And 3 months later, at the time I was doing one of my day jobs was working for West Music on some of their web stuff. And I had a sit down meeting with my dad and Robin Walenta, who's our CEO and president. And they invited me to come back. And 6 months later, I moved back.
And really a formal offer.
It was formal. It was a 7-page contract. They slid it across the table and said, take a look at it. And we want your answer in 30 days.
But let's be sure to remember, you were a professional actor.
I was.
For a good large. Yeah. And I remember the first time we asked you to speak, I think in front of our Gen Next program, it was a few years ago.
Yeah.
And you got up on stage and I went, whoa, this guy's got stage presence. I mean, there was no fear of the...
Retail is theater, I think.
Yeah, well, but you know, I mean, it was the combination of the training and the knowledge, but that was great.
Yeah, so I've been doing it now for 11 years.
Wow. So. That's gone fast, because I knew you before. I knew you in the... And I also know you've done some avant-garde theater, which is kind of cool.
Some real weird stuff.
Yeah, well, why not? Why not, I suppose say.
Yeah.
Nick, how about you? That's the thumbnail of...
Yeah, absolutely. So after hearing those two, I think my path was a little more straight and not quite as many left and right turns. But much like Ryan, it's a family retailer. We're fourth generation in Memphis. And so I grew up in the business, sweeping the floors and sticking barcode labels in the summer and just doing whatever needed to get done. So I went and did my degree at University of Tennessee in Knoxville and decided to come home and entered into the family business. And so, you know, I did grow up. I played a little in the band in high school. I recently ran into my band director and he reminded me, you know, I made a comment about, you know, I really wasn't that good of a musician. And he corrected me and he said, no, you were a good musician. You just had mediocre practice habits. You busted me on that one. But one of the things I've really enjoyed is getting to partake in sharing music with other people. I genuinely believe that music brings out the best of us. It makes us better. And that I think if all parents knew and understood the benefits of music, every single child would be enrolled in music. And so that's something that I really think is a great opportunity for our industry, is getting out there and just, again, sharing the benefits of music and what it does for us.
Yeah, we have to be our own ambassadors.
Yeah, we do.
Because no one's going to carry this water but us.
No, that's right.
Quite frankly, right? And that's kind of my mantra. If we can't believe it enough to go to work on it, but that's great. So we will call you the straight arrow in the crowd here, right?
Yeah, right? I guess so, after hearing the other ones.
I mean,
ones.
You did you get a business degree? Or
I did, yeah. It was undergrad in business and then a master's degree in finance. And so.
So you got the chops right out of the bat to help support the business.
On the business side of things, you know, sometimes I wish I had a little more thorough of a music background, but I think it's okay, you know.
And Ryan, you were a theater major?
Yep, theater major.
Yeah. And Mark, how about you? You're a communications major, is that right?
Yep, communications.
Yeah. All right, Stephanie, you're next. Give us your story.
I guess I'm a left and right turn person too, but I have no degree. I went from Air Force National Guard out of high school.
Oh, wow.
That's
a degree of sorts.
Right.
It absolutely is. Right.
It came down to a disability thing a couple years later. So I went straight back to working and had a family right away. Worked for a sports publishing company in accounting for 8 years and had a family friend that worked at Danzer and said, hey, I think you would really fit in the music industry. Loved music, but never went beyond radio. I never knew the world of school music or anything because I did not play an instrument. I wasn't in a band. Our band program was probably hardly non-existent at the school I went to. So it was not familiar territory for me at all.
So what is it about you that they thought that would make you good for the music industry?
Good question. I don't. But it's the personality, maybe? I don't know.
But they were right, right?
Right.
And it's been a good fit for you, right?
Yes. So yeah, 6 years later, here I am and still passionate. I love it. So much more to learn still. And I'm really excited.
Was it what you expected or was it more than you expected?
More than I expected.
In what ways? How is it?
You know, at first I thought it was going to be really boring.
And after being an accountant?
Right.
Oh my.
Right. But yeah, just how foreign it was to me and to know how passionate people are and how exciting it is. And there's always something to talk about. And being part of NAM and NAMYP and NASMD, just the networking, and everybody has the same passion. And that's what makes it so exciting and keeps me motivated to learn next. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm always wanting to pick people's brains because there's so much to learn still.
I mean, I think the four of you, what you've just shared is pretty much in the priceless category because anyone that's listening that's a quote-unquote a younger person looking at, all right, I've devoted so much time to my instrument or I've devoted a lot of time to be a composer or I want to be arranger of Broadway shows or, mm-hmm. you know, that there is a community here where there's a variety of opportunity. It's not just one opportunity.
Sure. Absolutely.
And yeah. I think that when we gather our college music students and young people at the NAMM show, that's really what we want to express to them. In other words, it's not one path. There's multiple paths and there's journeys along the way. There's unexpected journeys along the way. Any one of you want to add anything to that? It's a wonderful what we just offered, but just opening it up a little bit.
Well, I think it's completely true. And I think the industry is really welcoming just to good people. I mean, you know, the things that brought students a lot of success up until that point has maybe been their musical instrument or something like that. But there's always opportunity for people who want to come out and learn to relate or learn to sell or become leaders or advocates or things like that. And so that's one of the things I agree with you, Mary, that I really love about our industry is it's so different, so walk of life, different walks of life that we're able to enjoy.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, I think one thing that Stephanie, you said was that there's always something to learn. There's always something to do. And I think the thing that I liked about doing theater was it was always a new production. It was always a new challenge. And I come into work every day and it's always a new challenge. It's always something new and different. Mm-hmm. And so all of our paths being really different, it still kind of prepares you for just get into it and start figuring it out. So.
What should we all be humming now? Another
opening. Oh, another show. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah. You started it. All right, so we're gathered here at NASMD, the National Association of School Music Dealers. Why do you attend? What are your takeaways this year especially? What are you taking away? If only one day of work has happened, right? And we had a wonderful keynote luncheon mm-hmm. with Bernie Williams and the NAMM CEO, Joe Lamond. So far, why do you come?
The thing that I love about the NASMD show is, like the NAMM show, there are these great opportunities to all get together and connect, but NASMD is unique in that it's an opportunity to really attend sessions and you're really here for a lot of more education and networking where when I'm at the NAMM show, there's so many meetings and so many things to see and literally over 100,000 people there that this show, it's a different pace. It's a chance to really have a chance to reflect on the business, reflect on what are the things that I want to be working on for the business, and then have some really meaningful conversation with peers when you can't necessarily afford that time when you're at NAMM.
It's a really dig-in conference. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of learning going on here.
Yeah, yeah. You really slow down the pace of everything and get the opportunity, like you said, to dig in, to unpack some things that are really specific to our industry and to our business. You know, I think the goal for each of us is to leave with a list of things that we can do to improve our business and implement and take back with us.
So you're doing that at the end of day one? You've got a little list going?
I think all of us.
How about you, Stephanie?
The slower pace and the more intimate conversations that you get to have with people that you don't get to see at NAMM or an educator show or anywhere else. It's nice to be able to connect and actually kind of dig into some of those conversations that you can't have in a rushed pace of our other shows or other meetings that we do run into each other or store visits. You know, it's a totally different agenda, and it's part of our continuing education, if you will.
What's the saying that you work your business or you work on your business?
Yeah, working in your business.
Working in your business versus this is an opportunity to work on your business. Is that the spaces?
Sure. Yeah.
How about you, Mark?
You know, unfortunately, I can't be there this year, but in the years that I have been at NASMD, I think one of the great benefits is that, you know, the NAMM show is fantastic because we're all in the music products industry, but now this takes it and segments it down even a little bit more. So it's really valuable to talk to other folks that are doing exactly what we're doing on a daily basis. And sometimes that means it's sharing war stories, and that's good too, because, you know, it's good to know there's other people in the same boat that you're in. And it's saying, hey, this worked for me. Would it work for you? And this really didn't work for me. So if you're going to try it, this is just a word of caution. So I think that it's just so valuable, and all of those, the sessions are fantastic, but it's all of those other conversations that are so valuable that are on the side. I've always been amazed at the willingness of folks that I've met at NASMD, that I've met at NAMM, that are willing to share. Everyone in this industry is willing to share the good and the bad for the betterment of the industry. And I think that's an amazing thing that has been cultivated in the music products industry.
That's quite an interesting statement and a pretty serious secret sauce we've got, isn't it? Right?
Yeah,
you stand with all these competing brands. This morning, we did a percussion marketing council, gave their presentation, and they showed who's in that council. And it's every percussion manufacturer in the universe, basically. And they're all collectively standing together to go out and do workshops and teach us training supports and store visits and summer youth programs, all to bring just everyone into the tent.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty powerful. So.
Well, I think the one thing that Mark touched on, I mean, it is an amazing industry because there are these meaningful relationships that, you know, we get a chance to work together at NAMYP, but also form friendships and build these relationships. And it's a relationship business. I think that that's one of the things that one of my mentors, my dad, has really said, you know, it's all about the relationships. And it's one of the coolest things about the music industry is that it's a large industry, but it's small enough that you really get to know each other.
Right. You know, throughout my career, I've heard that, and of course, in my business with public relations and public policy and politics, really, is all about relationships. I heard that, you know, my colleague, but they said, but then I have to be nice to people. And they go, yes, Mary, you have to be nice to people. And yes, you know, I mean, that mostly comes, you know, 99% that comes naturally, but we all have the 1% of the day that it doesn't, but it does. That's the other reality. There's some wonderful people in this industry. Well, we do rely on you. And I say we, people of my generation, rely on all of you as the up-and-coming generation that represents NAMYP. You really represent the future of the school music business. You are emerging as leaders in the industry and participating and showing us your ideas and your capabilities. But I'd like to know, what are your hopes for the future of music education? What are your predictions? And some in the current generation, my generation, I would say, and some of them I've chatted with, they look back 15, 20 years ago, they were really worried about music education. We hadn't faced the recession of 2008, which we didn't take the dip that we thought we were going to tip. But there was a lot of anxiety. And a lot of us went to work to say, we're going to face that anxiety down. And we're going to face it down with research and advocacy and this relentlessly positive position we have about the benefits of music education and impact. But I'd love to hear from you, just in terms of you're in this business every day. You're serving the public every day in the school music sector. You're interacting with teachers, with parents, with school administrators. What are you seeing and what are your hopes? And I'm going to look to Memphis for the first.
Okay.
From Nick.
Well, I think we have to recognize that in our schools, it's very exciting when you see all the options that kids have now. There's a ton of classes that, I think back to my time in high school, and I think, we didn't have robotics. And, we're seeing schools now with, auto mechanic courses and cosmetology and law and things like that. And that's all really wonderful. But I think as an industry, we have to be, again, very cognizant to ensure that music keeps a place at the table and that people understand that there are benefits that are felt because students participate in music and we can tie them to test scores and math and reading and all of these things that schools are working to achieve right now. And a lot of the problems that they're facing, whether it's social connectedness with students or truancy or drug and alcohol, we can tie music to all of those things. And so I think as an industry, we've got to ensure that we're ensuring music has a seat at that table because there are more and more options for kids.
So the competition for time and resources is more intense maybe than
ever. Yeah, absolutely. You look at these schools and they have these pull-out sessions and they have all these extracurriculars and they're wonderful and I could just continue to be blown away and impressed with all of them. But if music gets layered in there and you ask a high-performing student to choose between honors English or, AP math or robotics and band or orchestra or choir, any of the arts, you're going to lose a lot of your high-performing students to these other options. And so, we just have to ensure that, we're talking with the school counselors, the principals, the superintendents, the teachers, the people who actually, are putting the schedules together and ensure that music is made a priority in our schools.
So we came some distance in that regard, but we have to keep working on that.
Yeah, until we have 100% enrollment in schools of music, and we still have schools that don't have that doesn't meet the requirements for ESSA, that aren't making music accessible to students. So we still have a long way to go of just making it accessible and then getting the kids enrolled in school.
Right. And doing it with intention.
Yeah.
And planning.
Yeah.
Right? Absolutely. Some real tactics.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Great.
So the hope that you're articulating means we need to keep working smarter. Yeah. And keep,
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we had some substantial legislation passed and wonderful, but we've got a long way to go in this journey. And there's still a lot of students out there who don't get the opportunity to enjoy the benefits of music. And, I think the NAM mission statement is a wonderful testament. We envision a world in which every student, that's what we're after, every student.
Right. And
I would say one of the things, don't you think we've made quite a huge amount of progress? I think what you're referring to, 15 years ago, just that concern.
There was just so much anxiety.
Yeah.
I couldn't interact with a NAM member in the school sector that wasn't going to fall any minute.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like that, I said, as I was looking at the things I could work on or maybe could impact, it's like, how do we move everybody forward to a place where we don't have that moment, mm-hmm. that they're dealing with abundance as opposed to... Right.
Well, I think some of the things that I've kind of seen take place is that the efforts on the research and the advocacy side of things and like MAC, we've created these tool sets that we can build off of over the next 10 years. And you're absolutely right. The competition for amount of things that kids could do, but we're also so much more well-equipped to say, we can all agree that making music, it just makes life better. Yeah. We don't even have to debate it. We've got objective information on that regard. And then I think the opportunities or the hopes that I see is those alternate musical experiences too. That tradition of band and choir and orchestra are solid foundations that were formed really in the 20th century for us for school music. But now the emergence of things like guitars in the classroom, or which you were talking about earlier today, or mariachi groups, or some of these alternate ways in that not every student's interested in band and orchestra. And so we can reach out to different cultural traditions, et cetera. And I think there's a real appetite and a real excitement from school administrators and teachers. Whereas before it was the easiest thing to cut. It was extracurricular instead of something that's really part of a core.
Now they want more.
Yeah.
Now they want more. It's in my experience out in the policy sector that they want more. And we are in a period, what you've both just said, we are in a period where more feels like it's better. In other words, more stuff thrown into the curriculum feels like it's better. Right? Now, I want to tell you, when I was in school, we had shop, we had auto mechanics, and they were building houses, and we had, you know, I mean, this is kind of like what's old is new again, and I get that. But, you know, we also stand for a very, very old technology called music. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look at the structure of music, you look at the science of music, you look at the, you know, the mathematics of music, it's a very old technology going back to the Greeks and, you know, previous theorists. So, yeah, I think, but it's so wonderful to hear you leaning forward. Stephanie, how about you leaning forward into the future of music?
Yeah, well, the thing that comes to mind that I've seen recently and have experienced recently as well is how important it should be, not as an option. It needs to be a course. Everybody should have to take it beyond just elementary music or whatnot, because things come to mind is music therapy. It's getting bigger. It's showing great success. So that kid that wants to be a doctor or a nurse or a therapist, or what they would gain to know how to play a guitar, how to play a drum, how to play, you know, how to play music of some sort, could really take their whole position to a whole new level of interacting with music therapy. I mean, it would be huge and it would go hand in hand. And I think you would see that in more opportunities if it was a mandatory subject.
Yeah, because
instead of just extracurricular.
Because ultimately it creates a changed human being.
Right.
And whether they become an engineer or an architect or a programmer, right? It's like, it's an intellectual base, intellectual, emotional base.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's any accident that students that major in music are more likely to get into medical school than students that major in pre-med. I mean, I don't think that's by accident. Mm-hmm. So the benefits of music are there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Breaking news from Pittsburgh. What do you think, Mark?
Well, you know, first of all, I would absolutely agree with you that anxiety piece is not there like it was. And that is certainly through the hard work of folks like you, Mary, and Bob Morrison. And I could certainly go on and name all of these names who have made that happen. And it's important for us to remember that, because unless we continue to do that work and continue to provide the research and get that information out there, then it's going to be a circle and we're going to be back right where we were. But also, it is important to keep moving forward. And part of that piece, I think, is the marketing end of it. We talk to music teachers all the time about marketing their music programs, and to a variety of audiences, to administrators, to parents, to students, because everyone's made some really valid points here of, hey, it should be for everybody. You know, we need to make people aware of the value of it. But every audience is looking at a different value, at what's important to them. A principal in a Title I school is going to see the value of a music program very differently in an elementary Title I school than in a high school that has a huge tax base. So it's, first of all, it's finding what the value of the audience and how do we market to that audience. And I've always said advocacy is marketing. So I think the next step in this advocacy work is to take the fear out of advocacy. So some people think advocacy means, ooh, scary public policy. That's obviously, public policy is a huge piece of advocacy, but that is not necessarily the entry point that everyone needs to take to be an advocate. It's very easy for a teacher to be an advocate of their program simply by telling people about their program, and here are the things that my students did, and here is the outcome that I've seen. And maybe that outcome is, you can say, they have done better on a standardized test. To me, that is not the outcome that speaks to me, but certainly there is a principle that might speak to. Is the outcome, we are creating a more well-rounded student who is going to be more culturally aware when they go out into the world as adults. To me, that's really important. So how do we find what the marketing piece is to tell the stories? You know, we always talk in advocacy about when you're meeting with a legislature, it's about those personal stories. yes, that's obviously really important, but those personal stories are important to administrators. They're important to parents. They're even important to other students that you're trying to recruit into your program. So I think we're over that hump of the anxiety, and that's fantastic. But if we don't want to go back to that point, it is a matter of saying, okay, here, we have found kind of maybe we've level set. So how do we keep what we have and continue to grow this by doing our own grassroots marketing? And then I think these other bigger issues will start to take care of themselves if that's what happens.
Wow. Well, you all have just given me kind of my marching orders for the next couple of years, I think. I mean, there's some really great ideas here, that there's hopes that you have that I think we could realize in some really solid tactics. There was also a tremendous fear of or a sense of inadequacy about doing advocacy. And I think we're helping to wash that out of the system too. I don't know what do you have any comments about that, Mark? You want to, since you've been so involved, you know, you're helping your state come up to the mark with some a new way of looking at its advocacy, right?
Absolutely, and that's exactly right. It's a new way of looking at it. It's not about going into a politician's office and pounding on the desk. It's not about understanding policy. There are folks out there that will do that, you know, and will handle that. In Pennsylvania, I'm kind of the person who will do that. I'll read the policy. I love doing that part. There are probably other people that are better suited, and it's obviously a teacher in the classroom that is better suited to tell the stories. So we have really tried to reframe the advocacy message to say it's not about bringing every music teacher in the state and every member of the music industry in our state to our state capitol. Yeah, we want you to join us, and that's great. But how do you do that homegrown advocacy? And that's the work that we're really trying to do, and demystifying what advocacy is. And maybe in some instances, not even using that word. It's using the word marketing your music education program and finding the right audience.
Yeah. And we, you know, with our NAM members, we've talked about being a champion for music education. And that could be as simple as having the mayor visit your store and having a student group in your store. So, well, you've all helped me to be more inspired today. Actually, my anxiety about music education will never really dissipate until someday I'm not doing this anymore.
That's the fire that gets you up in the morning.
Well, you know, it just kind of moves around the country, okay, right? So, you know, I really have a concern now with the reality of school inequities and the fact that we are really in a social justice movement, and that there are so many underserved schools that just by the nature of their zip code, they're getting less than, and even school districts that are right up next to each other.
Yep.
Because one's perceived tax base and another one's tax base reality. And the fact that states have not reimbursed those schools rapidly enough to able to make sure equity is maintained. And I also think that the greatest growth opportunity for the industry is in those large urban communities. That maybe even in the growth period of other programs, those programs have sort of stalled.
Mm-hmm.
And now through Title IV funding and work that we did with ESSA, there's more flexibility in some of those core supports that could actually bring those programs up a bit. Probably never to parity, mm-hmm, but there at least opportunity can move up to parity. So, that's a lot of sweat equity. But again, that's the work that inspires. And, you know,
we appreciate you being out there doing it and also guiding the rest of us to do it. I think that's another one of the great things about the industry is that, you know, we do mobilize in our individual communities as well as the fly-in, I know, coming up in May. But you help provide a little bit of the playbook, and we learn from each other, too.
Well, like we've got the state work happening through the coalition and the coalitions, and like the work in Iowa is happening, and there's great work happening in Tennessee. Illinois just had a drive-in to, you might not even be aware, there was a drive-in to the state capitol just a few weeks ago with this group of the Illinois music educators together with, you are aware of that.
Yep.
And of course, Mark, you work in Pennsylvania. So we're out there shaking it up, as they say. Any final thoughts, sign-offs, last words? No?
None for me.
None?
No, thanks for the opportunity to have a conversation.
Yeah, Mark, final thoughts?
No, I would just agree. Again, thank you, Mary, for doing it. And to echo Ryan's points, I mean, probably one of the people that have shaped my career more than anyone is Mary Lurson. and has taught me more. I feel like I've learned, I have a master's degree in music education policy thanks to Mary, because she does fire us up. She does inspire us, and we can't thank you enough for doing that.
Well, that's an awful nice way to end my day here in Palm Springs. Thank you. Thank you, Mark. It's so kind of you. And it's great to have a partner in crime, as Mark and several others are. But thank you, NAMYP, for all you're doing for the music industry.
Oh, and we should do a shout out for NAMYP, shouldn't
yeah.
we?
Yeah. Yeah. Where can they find NAMYP? Does they have its very own website and everything?
It's on, if you go to nam.org, you can find us there. And
if you go to namyp.com, it'll take you right there.
There you go. Marketing, right? You got to market your music.
Who's your audience? How do they get there, right?
But they can also join us if they do come to the winter or the summer show. We always try to do a social event on Thursday night, and we do our keynote speaker and networking session on Friday at 4 p.m. Usually the location is TBD. Sometimes it's the Member Center. Sometimes it's the Idea Center. And there's always a chance to meet other like-minded individuals that are just in the beginning part of their...
And I understand sometimes you guys really have a lot of fun. Guys and gals have some really fun. You go off and do...
I think so.
It's a place to hang, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And for the college students, I think it's just that natural step. You know, we're talking about the people listening in college. It's just the next step as you progress in the industry, networking and looking for opportunities.
Yeah. Well, thank you all. You've really inspired me a lot. And Mark, thank you for logging in.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
We miss you here in Palm Springs. And for all of you listening to Talking at Music Education, thank you so much for joining us today, a podcast of the NAMM Foundation.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. NAMM. That's Mary L-N-A-M-M.